Good morning. My entire autumn was filled with anticipation for this weekend. But having been here with you, anticipation has turned to blessing, has turned to joy. You're my kind of people. You're a singing church. You're hospitable. You're friendly. You're a Jesus-focused family. And I appreciate that. This is my favorite part of a weekend like this. I love to sing. Singing is my wheelhouse. I love to be there. But I realize the blessing that I have to be given this microphone and this pulpit. You have preeminent speakers who work among you, teaching shepherds, deacons. You have two men, Andrew and Ed, Brother Payne, who works among you. A lot of respect for his public speaking. And you've given me this microphone. And I count it a blessing to be given this hour. Except Max Dawson followed me here from Texas. And that's a little bit intimidating. I want to talk this morning about hearts and worship. Hearts and worship. I invite you to join me in the 95th Psalm. My premise this morning is that worship is designed by God for man. Worship is designed by God for man. God is not expanded by our worship. We are made better, are made blessed by our worship. And God designed worship that way. I am a firm believer that what God commands, God equips. And what God equips, God blesses. He made worship for you and me. And He designed it in such a way that it impacts our heart. It is a heart-to-heart encounter with God. We approach the very throne room of God in worship. And it's meant to change us. Now, change, that's one of those buzzy words, right? Change is something that we don't like change too much, right? Change means effort. Change means challenge. Change means doing something differently than what I did yesterday. But you have to approach worship ready for a heart change. You may be a guest here at Livingston this morning, and you may have noticed that maybe this family does some things different in their assembly than other places you've been. We don't worship the way we worship together because it's our favorite thing to do. We worship because we understand who is being worshiped, who designed worship, why He designed worship, and we're not looking for just the actions. We're looking for the blessings that come from worshiping God. And so why wouldn't we worship God in the way He's either commanded or given us examples of how He wants to be worshiped? Because again, if we worship in the way that He designed, we're the ones who are going to be blessed. We're seeking those blessings. Let's talk a little bit about definition of this word heart. It's not the pump that's pumping in our chest. When the Bible talks about the heart, it's talking about the mind and the emotion and the will of a person. So the mind, of course, that's where we think. We consider our five senses take in information. We consider that information. The emotion is where we feel. It is one thing to know that Jehovah is God. It is another thing to acknowledge that He's my God. It is one thing to know that the Lord is a shepherd. It is another thing to acknowledge the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He's going to lead me beside still waters and let me lay down in green pastures. It is one thing to know that Jesus died on a cross. It is a different thing to know that He died on a cross for me. I move from information about God to an emotion, to feel. He did this for me. My sins are the reason He died on a cross. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't end there. We also have a will. And the will is where we make decisions. It's where we decide to act, to change, to make our lives different tomorrow than they were yesterday. Worship, that encounter, that heart-to-heart encounter with God, is designed not just to stimulate the mind, not just to stir the emotion, but to storm the will. We're going to look at a couple of examples from the Old Testament. We're going to start with Psalm 95, then we'll turn over to Isaiah chapter 6 in just a moment. And we're going to see this progress in action from acknowledging facts to considering what that really means regarding myself and my relationship with God, and then seeing change take place in the will. Let's start with Psalm 95, a song of worship. Oh, come, let us sing to the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Let us come into His presence with thanksgiving. Let us make a joyful noise to Him with songs of praise. There's the call to worship. Come, let us worship. Because, he continues in verse 3, and see the facts about God that he considers. For the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. In His hands are the depths of the earth. The heights of the mountains are His also. The sea is His, for He made it, and His hands formed the dry land. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker. Look at what he considers. He turns his gaze upward, and he sees the high and holy God, Creator of all, Jehovah. And he considers how mighty is He. He holds the depths in His hand. He formed the mountains. The sea is His. Yeah, let's come worship and bow down. But look how the language changes, verse 7. And in verse 3, he said, the Lord, Jehovah, is a great God. But listen to the difference in verse 7. He is our God. And we are the people of His pasture and the sheep of His hand. You see the move there? He's moved from God is great to God is my God. God is my shepherd. I am but a sheep in His presence. Now he's taking it to that next level and feeling the impact in his heart of what that means to consider Jehovah God. And then if the first time you read this, you might think, well, it kind of goes off the rails in the next verse. Everything's all happy and fine. And he starts pointing his finger at you. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as on the day of Massah in the wilderness, when your fathers put me to the test and put me to the proof, though they have seen my work. For 40 years I loathed that generation and said, they are people who go astray in their hearts, and they have not known my ways. Therefore I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. We go from this beautiful bucolic setting of I'm considering God, he's my God, he's my shepherd, to but don't harden your heart. But get it here. You have to bring your heart to worship, and you have to bring a humble, pliant heart to worship in order for you to get anything, that blessing which God has filled worship with. Don't harden your heart. It's been said that some people don't get anything out of worship because they didn't bring anything to put it in. Folks, we have to bring our hearts to worship in order to enjoy the blessings of worship. So when you come, whether it's in your individual worship at home or with friends in a small group, or it's here in this building, every time you have to come prepared for change. Because worship that is effective, worship that God has designed, will change you if you bring your heart, your humble heart, to worship. Let's see this in action. Turn over with me to Isaiah chapter 6, a very familiar passage where Isaiah, in the year of the death of King Uzziah, has a vision of heaven. You know, the Gospels are essentially, up until the time you get to Jesus' crucifixion and death and burial and resurrection, before that, the Gospels are essentially an account of people's encounters with Jesus Christ. A lot of them came away rejoicing, worshiping, wonderfully blessed. A few did not. You may be reminded of the rich young ruler who came away from his encounter with Jesus with sadness. Others encountered Jesus and were just confused as to what this was. They didn't understand. Pilate just wanted the whole thing to go away, right? That was his objective. Just make the whole things go away. Wash my hands. I don't know. And what was the determining factor between how somebody came away from that encounter with Jesus? I put it to you, it was their heart. Whether they came with a humble heart or a hardened heart, as the psalmist said in Psalm 95. Let's see what this looks like in an event in Isaiah's life. Isaiah chapter 6. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. And above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings. With two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." And the foundations of the threshold shook as the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. You see him, he's taking all this in. He's considering the data about God, right? His mind is being stimulated by all his senses. He feels it. I mean, literally feels it, not with his arm. He feels the temple shaking. He sees it. He hears the sound. And then something happens. Verse 5, and I said, woe is me, for I am lost. For I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King and the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth. And he said, behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin is atoned for. And then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And then I said, here I am. Send me. So the first thing that happens to Isaiah there in this vision, he's taking in all this data, and then how quickly does that turn from the mind being stimulated to an emotional response? What is his emotional response? Woe is me. I am not supposed to be here. This is too big for me. He starts doing some introspection, doesn't he? Not just the facts about God, but his relationship to God comes into question. Woe is me. I am lost. That's an emotional response. It is beyond our ability, I believe. I believe we're made this way. It is beyond our ability to not have an emotional response to Jehovah God, Jesus Christ, his Son, and what they have done for us. So we considered around this table this morning. It's an emotional story, the gospel. It's built on historical fact that we consider. But again, it is not enough to know that Jesus died. We must consider that he died for me. That he did that because he loves me. Because he cares about me. It's not about the rules. Worship is not about the rules. The rules is the conduit, right? The commands and the examples we have, very important. They are how we get to the blessing, but it is about the relationship. And as Jesus said, you know, if you love me, you're going to do what I say. You're going to do it in the way I said it. So there's no conflict between rule and relationship. Rules is how we get to a relationship with God. They're the channel. So we worship God in the way he would have us worship. And do you see the change in Isaiah? Look at the change in Isaiah based on his comments. He starts by saying, woe is me, I'm undone, I'm lost, I'm not supposed to be here. This is all too big for me. You ever feel that way when you're just really meditating on what God has done for you? And then he's cleansed by God. He is atoned by God. And look at his last quote there. Who can be our ambassador? The call goes out. Who can be our ambassador? And this one who just a couple of verses before said, I'm not even supposed to be here, is now saying, here I am. Send me. Do you see the change in Isaiah from those words? Woe is me. I am lost. Here am I, send me. Do you see his will being stormed there? Use me. Let me be the one who is doing your work, God, says Isaiah. Choose me. That's a far cry from, I'm not up to this. This is where he starts. Woe is me. Our worship is intended to stimulate our minds, to stir our emotion, but the ultimate purpose, the ultimate change that awaits us in, from worship is the storming of our will. Where God says, here's what I did, here's what it means, here's how much I love you. And then we make a decision. What am I going to do about that? As Pilate actually preached the gospel in three statements that he made. He said, behold the man, broken. And he said, behold your king. And then he said, what would you have me do with Jesus? There's the gospel in a nutshell. Pilate didn't even know he was preaching it, but he did. Behold the man, behold your king. Now what are we going to do with this Jesus? And that's the storming of the will. Now, there were those on that day, the multitude on that day said, well, let's kill him. Because they had brought hardened hearts to their Jesus encounter. We're going to be changed by worship. The question is, for the better or for the worse, we're not going to come away from worship unchanged. And that change, the quality of that change will be determined by the quality of the heart that we bring. Isaiah started with, not me, to use me. Hebrews chapter 10 is pretty much the go-to passage whenever we want to talk about our assemblies. And we jump right down to verse 25. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25. You could probably quote it to me. Not neglecting to meeting together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another and all the more as you see the day drawing near. True. But it's in the context of a lot more. This says show up. I used to tell people that I work with, you know what success is? 80% of success is showing up. 80% of success is being present. But aren't we reaching for that other 20%, right? And you're going to find that other 20% before verse 25 in Hebrews chapter 10. Let's start in verse 19. Brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is, through his flesh. And since we have a great priest over the house of God, you're going to start seeing, hearing some heart words here. Let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from a evil conscience, and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. You might be able to find more than what I'm going to show you here, but I see several adjectives about our heart that need to be present whenever we gather to worship. I see in verse 22 several, a true heart. An assured heart. We need to be trusting that when God says something, that is it. That he has spoken. He is true to his word. The one who's promised is faithful. We need to be assured of that. We need to have a true, a sincere heart. And we need to have a clean heart in verse 22. Is anything standing between you and God? Well, you need to move that out of the way. Because if anything is standing between you and God, that thing between you and God is closer to God than you are. Get it out of the way and draw near. He says, draw near. I put verse 20, that should be verse 20 and 21, a humble heart. He says there that we need to acknowledge that this is God's house. Yes, we're priests, but we have a high priest. It is Jesus Christ, by His blood, who has rolled out the carpet and invited us into His presence, into the Holy of Holies. It is by the power of His blood, it is by His invitation, that we even have access to this blessing of worship. It's His house. It's His invitation. It's His drawing. And verse 24, we need to have a considerate heart. When you come here, do you come with a heart that is ready to consider the needs of others? We're going to talk more about that tonight. But that's an important part of what this assembly in Hebrews 10 was all about. Spurring one another on. The psalmist said in Psalm 19, let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing in your sight. O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. We tend to think of worship as a set of acts because that is what we experience with our five senses, right? That's how we express in a physical world worship. But we need to remember that the acts that we participate in together, the acts of worship that we participate in, are an expression of worship. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O God. Both the internals and the externals are important. And both, said the psalmist, I want to be pleasing unto God. Not just the externals. Jesus said the same thing to the Jews that he said to the church in Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2. He said, I can hear your voices. I can hear what you're saying. I can see your actions. Where's your heart? Where's your heart? Where's your love? It seems to be a pretty consistent theme with Jesus and this idea of coming to Him in worship. They worship me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me, he told the Jews. I want to take just a moment. We're almost at the end. This is almost over. I want to take just a moment and talk about, just definitively, from Scripture, the words that are used, that are translated, worship. And I think we'll learn something about what worship is supposed to be about from these three words. The first word has to do with reverence, admiration, devotion. It's used in Acts 16 to talk about Lydia, who was a worshiper of God. She was one who adored God, revered God. Matthew 15, we actually just talk about these people worship me with their lips. Are they in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commands of men? That's reverence, adoration. The second word has to do with humbly bowing down before a superior. It has to do with humility. We see that over and over in the Gospels as people encounter Jesus. Actually starts with the wise men there in Matthew chapter 2. They came and they bowed and they worshiped Him and gave Him gifts. And that happens over and over and over as people encounter Jesus Christ. We also see it in Revelation chapter 4. Those who bow before the throne, right? The 24 elders and the four creatures. So, remember that song? It used to be, I Can Only Imagine? And it imagines, what will I do when I see Jesus Christ? What will I do? Will I jump up and down? Will I sing? Will I smile real big? I suspect we'll all just follow on our knees. And bow before Him. And acknowledge Him as Lord. And there's a third one. Service and sacrifice. Romans chapter 12. Give your bodies as living sacrifices, for this is your worship. Your reasonable service, yours might say. Your translation might say. And then Paul goes on to list several things after that. Here's what giving your bodies a living sacrifice looks like, whether it's in your edification or your love or your service or your teaching. The things that you do and say. Do it with all your heart. Hebrews 8 uses this word when talking about the service that the priest, not the high priest, but the service that the priest did around the temple. It's even used of Anna when Jesus was presented at the temple. You remember Anna, the old woman who hung around the temple? A widow woman hung around the temple, and it said daily she worshipped. She was there serving. So, by definition, worship, when we talk about worship, we need to be talking about reverence, humility, and service. And we'll talk more about service tonight. Because I believe Jesus taught a parable about this. He said, when you serve one another, who are you really serving? You're serving me, he said. When did we ever see you, Jesus? When were you at our worship service? I don't remember seeing a guy with a beard and a robe and sandals. When were you ever at our worship service? When you served one another, he says, you were serving me. Edwin talked about how inseparable the concept of Jesus the head is from you and I, the body. When we consider the body, we're considering the head as well. So let's review. Worship is designed by God for man. We are only going to get out of worship what God has put into worship by bringing our hearts to that worship. And that heart is our mind. Get ready to be stimulated in your mind. Consider the facts. But it's also our emotion. Get ready for a story of love. But it's also our wills. And perhaps that's the toughest thing we can, that's the heaviest thing we carry around with us. But if we bring our hearts and we engage in worship, we will encounter God and we will experience change. So I encourage you, don't let this hour that you spend together get old. Don't let this table around which you gather every week become stale. I saw a video of a fellow one time who said, asking me if remembering the Lord every week, asking me if that makes it get old and tired and stale is like asking me, do you ever get tired of tucking in your babies at night? Do you ever get tired? You know, why don't you just do that once a year so it's a fresh and new every time? Yeah, you with young kids or have had young kids know that is just foolish. When you have a relationship with the one that you are interacting with, remembering and embracing never gets old. And you value each moment. Never let your song become stale. Never let His word become old. It is living and active. Come to worship with a heart that is prepared for change and set on pleasing God. Now tonight, we're going to talk about the purpose of our assemblies. A little bit, you know, related, but a little bit different. There is more to our assemblies, from what I can tell in the New Testament, than just worshiping God. It is a primary purpose, but there are other primary purposes for which we assemble. And we're going to talk about that some tonight. If you are not a worshiper of God, I want you to consider for just a moment the price that He paid so that you could be. Jesus says, come. But before He even invited you to come, He went. He took the first step. He made the first move. He showed you love by what He sacrificed and where He sacrificed it. You may be suffering from something in your life, looking for a solution. And I want you to remember this. God did not let Himself off the hook of human suffering. In fact, He quite literally put Himself on the hook of human suffering just so He could invite you. And like He did with Isaiah, take someone who, yeah, maybe you don't feel worthy, but take someone like that in a tone and cleanse, and heal, and purify. So that you can go from, woe is me, I'm lost, to here am I. Lord, send me. If these good people in this church can help you walk closer with God today, then we invite you to come as we stand and sing.